Hello everyone, welcome to Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly, and on the line from Gosford on the New South Wales Central Coast, Vision Australia Adaptive Technology Consultant David Woodbridge. David, your book, I See, a beginner's guide from the blindness and low vision perspective of using Apple products. This book is getting more prominence.
It did indeed. It actually got onto the Apple Hot News page for Australia. So if you go to www.apple.com.au and look up the Hot News link, you'll find a link to my book on the iTunes Store, of course. So I'm very pleased that besides being in what is hot in the iTunes Store, it actually got onto the website for Apple Australia. So I'm pleased about that, and I'm also pleased that Apple's taking such a liking as far as advertising goes, of course, is concerned. It's lovely.
Tell us again why it's such a good idea to chase this book.
Basically, I wrote it, and it's really a collection of articles, so that if you pick up almost any Apple product, from an iPod Shuffle to a Mac, in that book is a clear description of the physical description and how to get up running on any of those devices from a blind person's perspective. And of course, it's absolutely free.
Yes, so well worth following, everyone, in the iTunes Store. Now, the Vision Australia Texpo, it's 6 months away, 7 months away, but it's going to come around pretty quick. The dates have been announced?
The dates of the Texpo are going to be the last Friday and Saturday in August, and that'll be in Melbourne. Then the first Friday and Saturday in September, and that will be Sydney. And then basically the second week in September, on the Friday and Saturday, will be in Brisbane. So the three states will be covered, and as usual, it's going to be a cross-section of all the great technologies for blind and low vision, including high-tech and hopefully some low-tech stuff as well.
It's a good one to get along to, isn't it? There's plenty to see.
It is indeed, and hopefully we'll have some more things to show people by the time it comes around, and the planning, I believe, starts in earnest in March.
There are some very interesting international technology conferences, disability technology conferences coming up.
That's right. The ATIA conference is coming up this week, and it starts on the 29th US time and runs to the 1st of February. And that's basically all the Assistive Technology Association professionals get together and showcase all their different products. So that's in Florida in the US. And then, of course, the absolute big one, which everybody knows about in March, from March 17 to March 22nd, is, of course, the CSUN conference for technology for people with disability. And that's probably the most popular conference. I believe that they're up to conference number 29 now.
They're doing well. They've been going for quite a while.
Absolutely. And that's across all disabilities, not just blind and low vision. It's a huge conference. And on the show notes for the program, I've got links to both the ATIA and the CSUN conference. It's a really good way to see what's happening, trending in the areas of technology, of course, for both blind and low vision, and, of course, if you're interested in other disability groups as well.
That reminds me, they're very good notes that you do provide for each show. Tell people how they can find them.
Now, for the moment, there's been a slight change. At the moment, we haven't got the information going up on the Vision Australia website at the moment. So if you need to go to it, this is my own blog page for the moment. So that is http://, my full name, all one word, davidwoodbridge.blogspot.com.au. And that's where you'll find the notes for the Talking Tech programs for the moment. We've had some issues with the blog site at Vision Australia officially, so we're hoping to get that rectified in the next week or two. So again, that website is http://davidwoodbridge.blogspot.com.au.
That's the key part, davidwoodbridge, all one word, .blogspot.com.au.
Correct.
Yeah, very good. Now, Mac, 30 years old.
Yes, it was. I'm starting to feel like myself because I was 20 years old when this came out. But I must say that my first Mac or Apple product was not a Mac. It was an Apple IIe, of course, running the Echo synthesizer. I didn't get my first Mac until 1990. It was a Mac SE. And then, of course, I had an LC 475, a 575. And then since 2005, I've had several Macs, MacBook Pro, Mac Air, and, of course, the iMac. But it's really interesting to look back and see how consistent Apple's actually been over that 30-year period. I could literally pick up a Mac from 20 years ago and still use it because the consistent user interface is still the same and is still as straightforward to use as it's ever been. So as we all know, with Windows XP going to Windows 8, there's been several changes to the interface, but with the Mac, it's pretty much stayed the same. And like I said, I can pick up a Mac from 20 years ago and still use it. And of course, as we all know, it's got accessibility options built into it for all disabled groups, not just blind and low vision folks.
Did it have those accessibility features 20 years ago?
No. 20 years ago, it actually had close view, and then later on was enlarged from Berkeley Systems, but with the Mac came close view, the large print. And then, of course, for speech, they had the screen reader outspoken for the Mac. We didn't see built-in speech for the Mac until 2005 with Tiger 10.4. So that's when I really started using it in earnest. In the 90s, with outspoken for the Mac, I primarily used it with my kids to, you know, start CDs up and that sort of stuff. It worked quite well for that.
Oh, I see. Yes, but you couldn't use it then the way you can now. Nope. Yeah. They've done well with accessibility over many years, though, haven't they?
They have done really well. I mean, they've really put the metal to the pedal. Oh, sorry, that's pedal to the metal, the other way around. I'm doing really well today. Since 2005. So they've really put a lot of effort into accessibility on the Mac side of things, besides the iPhone and the iPad, of course.
About 18 months ago, David, we saw a very interesting application first come out, a thing called Flexi. This is an iPhone app. I think it can be used on the iPad as well, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. It's had a bit of a history now, hasn't it, over that 18 months?
It has had a bit of a history. It's gone more into mainstream now. So it's a great pattern recognition application for voiceover users on the iPhone. Because they're going to this SDK stuff now, where they can build themselves into applications or apps now, both on iOS and Android, they've made a bit of a split with the main app now on the iPhone. So what they're saying now is for voiceover users, you go off and use this Flexi VO version rather than the standard Flexi version itself. And there's two camps of thought on this. One is, you know, isn't it really great that they're actually specifying and looking at development for a particular app for voiceover users, versus if they're splitting it off and concentrating mainly on the mainstream app, it's probably going to look like that Flexi VO will stay exactly where it is in stasis and not be that well developed in the future, and they'll put all the concentration into the main app. I'm not convinced that having two separate apps is a good idea. It's like having two separate websites, one supposedly for accessibility and one for mainstream. I believe it's always important to have accessibility built in to whatever product you're talking about, not having a separate offshoot for it.
Flexi VO is free, and that makes one wonder whether it's going to get the priority that you'd want to, as a user, you would want it to have.
That's right, and I guess, as with everything else, time will tell in the future, but I'm personally not particularly happy about it, but like I said, we'll see what happens in the future.
Mm. Yeah, just explain a little more to people how it works, because it's pretty neat, isn't it?
Yes, so Flexi VO works in the fact that when you touch the screen, you don't have to find the letters of the keyboard. You basically do a pattern of the word, so you touch where T and the H and the E may be for the word the, and then it works out from your pattern on the keyboard what word you meant to type, and of course if you get it wrong or it's not the right word, you can flick down and choose other words, and the same goes for numbers and punctuation. So it's a very quick application. When it first came out, it said you can type 25 words a minute, and I thought, yeah, tell me another one. And of course you can definitely type extremely quickly with Flexi, and of course you can then post out to Facebook, Twitter, etc. from the app itself.
Yes, and people will find that it's pretty responsive these days, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed.
Yeah. Now, tell me about Windows with the phone, some how-tos.
Windows Phone 8 has sort of crept up on a little bit. I still haven't played with one yet. But basically, this is a phone, of course, from Microsoft, and they've just updated the Windows how-to page for accessibility, and it goes through a number of topics, including larger fonts on the phone, high contrast, screen magnification, speech output using dedicated, basically text-to-speech, and, of course, the now screen reader, That's now available on Windows Phone from the Windows Phone App Store, produced by Code Factory, and of course that's mobile accessibility. And while it doesn't give you access to all the features throughout the whole phone, etc., it does give you the primary functionality of using the phone, such as accessing the lock screen, making phone calls, sending messages, accessing the clock, and all that sort of stuff. But it's a very detailed list. It gives you tips and tricks on how to find these things, turn them on and off when you want to. It's a very good page, and of course that's the link on the show notes as well. But I think they've done very well. Again, personally, you know, bolting a screen reader on to an operating system, I think, again, that it'd be nice if it was, you know, part of the operating system, i.e. if Microsoft actually built a screen reader into the phone, not just having a third party develop an application for the phone, which Apple doesn't do.
Mm. Yes, yeah, and it's quite a difference, and it really affects the development of it and therefore the way people are able to use it, doesn't it?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, Google's, you know, got TalkBack, iPhone has, or Apple's got VoiceOver, but, you know, Microsoft said, well, obviously we haven't got there yet. They've been promising for several years now, and they just thought, oh, well, let's get Code Factory to make the screen reader for us then.
Can we talk about passwords just for a minute or so?
We can. Now, I saw this as an article from the Tech Buffalo people on Twitter, and basically it's the most popular 25 passwords in 2013, and really weird, but you wouldn't think people use some of these. Some of the common ones were things like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Another really good one was 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Another one was ABC, 1, 2, 3. And the worst one of all that I'm concerned of, the two worst ones of all, was password or password 1. And I don't know how you could get any more annoying than actually writing out a password and putting password in the field, and yeah, even password 1 for that
but
matter.
You could make it really sophisticated and have it password 01, couldn't you?
Well, you could. I think people would actually work that one out. So as we always say, make all your passwords and all your different systems unique. Use a combination of punctuation, numbers, and random letters as much as you can, and do not use the same password on the same system, particularly your banking account or online other sites such as, you know, credit card websites and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Make them more unique,
yeah,
and if you're an iPhone user, store them in one password or Keeper or those sort of type security applications for passwords.
Now, just before we go, I want to flash back to the 30-year history of Mac that we were talking about. A couple of interesting articles you've identified.
That's right. So the main one was Jason Snell from Macworld had a talk with the Apple executives about 30 years of the Mac, and that was quite an interesting one where they were basically saying that the Mac is full steam ahead. It's not going to be combined with iOS, like other people are actually saying. It standalones on itself, and that really sort of pines out in the fact that Apple today just released their Q1 financial results.
Mm.
And basically what they've done is they've sold 51 million iPhones, which is up from 47 million. They've sold 26 million iPads, up from 22 million. And my favorite one, because I love the Mac so much, they've sold 4.8 million Macs, up from 4.1 million. And astoundingly, 63% of Apple's revenue for the year came from international sales, not from the US.
Very, very interesting.
It's really amazing stuff.
David Woodbridge, Adaptive Technology Consultant with Vision Australia. And David, we'll talk again next week. This has been Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly.